everybody. Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to make every effort we can tonight to thoroughly piss off anyone who happens to be listening, including possibly liberals. This thing I have from Naomi Wolf is pretty scary. However, today, President Obama signed the so-called reconciliation bill that fixes health care reform that was passed by Congress last week. And this didn't get a lot of attention. I don't know how the Republicans let this get passed without, you know, wetting their pants and screaming and acting all freaked out about it. But included in there was student loan legislation that is being called one of the most significant investments in higher education since the GI Bill. The GI Bill was passed in, what, 1946? It's called the Student Aid and Fiscal Responsibility Act, SAFRA. The federal government is now going to lend directly to students, which ends billions of dollars in wasted subsidies to firms that used to provide the loans. In other words, the way it used to work, and it worked this way for a long time, the Treasury would give the money to the banks would loan it to students, and if for whatever reason the student couldn't repay, the banks became just predatory bastards that would go after these students. Like loan sharks. And the question in my mind was always, why is there something in the middle, this lump of debris, this banking industry that stood between the government that was issuing the loans and the students who were getting them? So now the government will lend directly to students, and this waste, all this interest and vigorish and crap that these filthy banks were stealing from students will end. The bill will save an estimated $68 billion over 11 years. And money from the program will come from the U.S. Treasury, which will lend it to the Education Department at 2.8% interest. And the money will then be lent to students at 6.8% interest. And as it says here, eliminating the middleman allows the Education Department to keep its 4% spread as profit, money that will be used to help impoverished students. And if the Education Department were to actually set up its own bank, on the model of the green bank that's being proposed in the energy bill, could generate even more money for higher education. Now, I understand that also in this bill, the payback works like this. Whatever the students wind up owing when they complete their education, they have 20 years to pay it back. And they can't be charged more than 10% every night, Kathy. Must be something in the studio. Maybe it's the dead body over here, the right winger that came up on my front porch, the one I had to drill. Is it you? Are you doing it? After 20 years, whatever the student hasn't paid back, that will be forgiven. That loan will disappear. And in that 20-year period, the student will only have to pay back no more than 10% of his or her income. Deep breath. This is ridiculous. Oh, my God. I can't get the tickle out of my throat. I don't know what I'm going to do. And it'll be forgiven after 10 years if the student goes into some kind of public service work, like nursing. The president of the Catholic League, do you know what that is? It's a lay organization. It's run by Bill Donahue. He's the guy in New York who every year tells the organizers of the St. Patrick's Day Parade that no queers are allowed. If you're Irish and happen to be gay, too bad. You're not going to be allowed to march in the parade. And, of course, every year, gay folk to one degree or another. We may have to stop the program if this doesn't stop. I'm serious as a heart attack. I can't get two sentences out of here. What the hell happened? This, yeah, if you would. Do you have time? I got to get something here to, I was going to say suck on, but I better not say that. Bill Donahue, the president of the Catholic League, who is homophobic. He defines homophobia. If you look in the dictionary under the word homophobic, you'll find Bill Donahue. I don't know what his problem is. I know how it could be solved, but I don't know what his problem is. He bought a, what do they call this? It's an advertising editorial that went on the op-ed page of the New York Times today. And the headline here is, going for the Vatican jugular. And what Bill Donahue tries to do is to paint the priesthood and the Pope as being totally innocent. And this is what he writes, Donahue. Recent accusations against the Vatican deserve a response. He writes, Father Lawrence Murphy apparently began his predatory behavior in Wisconsin in the 1950s. Now, this is a guy who, conservative estimates are, he raped as many as 200 kids. Father Lawrence Murphy apparently began, deaf kids, apparently began his predatory behavior in Wisconsin in the 1950s, yet the victims' families never contacted the police until the mid-1970s. Ooh, well, there you go. After an investigation, the case was dropped. Next, the Vatican did not learn of the case until 1996. Now, do you get this? Bill Donahue's a liar. He is an absolute liar. He's probably a Republican. Well, he has to be a Republican. He's a liar. The Vatican did not learn of the case until 1996. We're to believe that nobody for almost 50 years knew about a priest who was raping literally hundreds of deaf students in Wisconsin. Oh, okay. Cardinal Ratzinger, now the Pope, was the head of the office that was contacted in 1996. There is no evidence that he knew of it, but even if he did, he would have had to allow for an investigation. While the inquiry was proceeding, Murphy died. So there you go. The Nazi Pope, when he was cardinal, he had to allow for an investigation, and, you know, that takes time. And in the meantime, the criminal rapist priests in question died. Donahue goes on, the Times questions why Father Murphy was never defrocked. But only the Vatican can do that. And since it never learned of the case until he was dying, it was never a realistic option. Oh. Donahue goes on, the Times, he's referring to the New York Times, says the Vatican's I'm sorry. I don't know what to do here. I'm about to lose my voice. Do you have a best of ready? Okay. Well, you better start because this is, I don't know. I don't know what the hell's happening. Is it the corpse over here in the corner? Is it the dead conservative? The New York Times says the Vatican's canonical inquiry was done in secret. That's correct. The proceedings of internal investigations, even in organizations like the New York Times, are never shown on C-SPAN. Well, that's a cute answer. The Times says repeatedly that church officials did not report accusations of abuse to the police. The common response of all organizations, secular as well as religious, was to access therapy and reinstate the patient. Today, it is obvious that Today, it is obvious that a more hardline approach is necessary, though therapy is still popular in many quarters. Therapy for a child rapist. We'll be right back.
humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. What I'm quoting from here, Bill Donahue is the president of the Catholic League, a secular organization. I think Donahue considers himself to be like the enforcer, like a mafia enforcer for the Catholic Church, especially in New York. Well, he's got an op-ed, I believe is what they call it. He buys a space. It's about a quarter page or the eighth of a page ad on the op-ed page of New York Times today, where he accuses the media, New York Times, of going for the Vatican jugular. That's his headline. The last charge he makes against New York Times, the Times continues to editorialize about the, quote, pedophilia crisis, end quote, when all along it's been a homosexual crisis. See how they do this? 80% of the victims of priestly sexual abuse. No, it's not sexual abuse. These are felonies. These are rape of children. 80% of the victims of priestly sexual abuse are male, and most of them are post-pubescent. Post-pubescent. Now, what does this evil bastard Bill Donahue mean by that? When's puberty? 11, 12, 13? So if the boys are post-pubescent, it is not, according to this sick bastard, it is not child rape. It is merely a homosexual relationship. He goes on, while homosexuality does not cause predatory behavior, well, you just indicated it did. And most gay priests are not molesters. Most of the molesters have been gay. Uh-huh. This Bill Donahue knows that. How does he know that? Because he is a prejudiced bastard who doesn't have a clue, but he is Bill Donahue. And then he finishes up with this paragraph. Here's what's really going on. Now get this. This is amazing. Bill Donahue now will tell us what's really going on. By that, I guess he means several centuries of child rape by one of the most predatory organizations on earth, the Catholic Church, and its priesthood. Here's what's really going on, Bill Donahue says. The Times has teamed up with Jeffrey Anderson, a radical lawyer who has made millions suing the church and greasing professional victims groups like SNAP so they can weaken the church's moral authority. Why? Because of issues like abortion, gay marriage, and women's ordination. That's what's really driving them mad, and that's why they're on the hunt. Those who doubt this to be true need to ask why the debt-ridden New York Times does not spend the same resources looking for dirt in other institutions that occurred a half century ago. This is amazing. You know, the Catholic Church needs to end. And in that light, Richard Dawkins, I'm sure you know who he is. He's a celebrated biologist and an ethicist, and he's also a celebrated atheist. He writes about the Nazi Pope. Richard Dawkins doesn't think the Pope should resign. He writes, as the College of Cardinals must have recognized when they elected him, he's perfectly, ideally qualified to lead the Roman Catholic Church, a leering old villain in a frock who spent decades conspiring behind closed doors for the position he now holds, a man who believes he is infallible and acts the part. A man whose preaching of scientific falsehood is responsible for the deaths of countless AIDS victims in Africa. A man whose first instinct, when his priests are caught with their pants down, is to cover up the scandal and damn the young victims to silence. In short, exactly the right man for the job. He should not resign, moreover, because he is perfectly positioned to accelerate the downfall of the evil, corrupt organization whose character he fits like a glove, and of which he is the absolute and historically appropriate monarch. End quote. Man, do I agree with that. Pope Benedict XVI, the Nazi Pope, Ratzinger. Man. Well, I know I focus a lot on this topic lately, and if you're Catholic, you're probably pissed off, but that's just too bad. Reporting the story is very necessary, because the Catholic Church has become, if it wasn't always, a corrupt, degenerate organization that needs to just go away, like so many religious institutions that have disappeared from the pages of history. The Catholic Church needs to disappear. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It is about 25 before the hour. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution is reporting now that Representative David Scott, who is African-American and who supported the health insurance reform bill, is receiving death threats. He tells the newspaper that he's gotten threats to say things like, "David Scott, you're nothing but a," and then the N-word. And he goes on, "None of your colored constituents are going to be able to save you, because we don't want this socialized Obamacare you're pushing, because you Negroes are too lazy to take care of yourselves." Scott represents Georgia's 13th district. A swastika was painted outside his office in suburban Atlanta a couple of months ago. That was right after a town hall confrontation with a protester. That thug was never found. It's interesting. Crimes of violence down here committed by Klansmen or right-wingers or skinheads, in so many instances, the perps are never found. No scurrilous remark here or implication about law enforcement in metro Atlanta, but it's amazing. In so many instances, they're just never found. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution got a copy of a letter that Representative Scott received yesterday, and it's addressed to David Scott and family. It says, "Y'all don't need to worry about getting reelected on November, but you'd better be moving out of Georgia before November, because y'all getting what's coming for ya." And then the Latin, "Sic semper tyrannis." Scott said, quote, "A lot of this is not about health care. A lot of people just don't want to see this African-American president succeed. We've got to expose this and not allow them to rule the day. This is not America," end quote. Well, it is America. This is exactly what America has become. Scott said he's been in touch with law enforcement regarding the threats, also the Secret Service. He added, "We have security, and we'll do everything we can to make sure we're protected, our families are protected." It's just astonishing. This is what Glenn Beck and Red State, all these filthy right wing websites. These people are not interested in solving differences. What they're interested in is the confrontation. Every one of these bastards is essentially a coward. Every single one of them is a coward. Well, you've heard me say it a million times, and they're... they're destroying the country. I just wonder how much longer. How much longer? Sarah Palin is telling Tea Partiers to stop cars with Obama bumper stickers. You heard about this. On Saturday, when she was at the rally in Searchlight, Nevada, she said, it's like that old bumper sticker that says, government, if you think our problems are bad, wait till you see our solutions. The crowd cheered. So she went on, or that bumper sticker you see on the next Subaru driving by, an Obama bumper sticker. You should stop the driver and say, so how is that hopey changey thing working out for you? Now, it's interesting. About a week ago, a man in Nashville, Tennessee, was driven off the road because his car had an Obama-Biden bumper sticker. He had his 10-year-old daughter in the car with him. This was, when was this? Last Thursday, I believe. The victim told a television news station the incident happened around 4:30 p.m. He said the perp, a guy named Harry Weisiger, gave him the bird, rammed into his vehicle after noticing an Obama-Biden sticker on his car bumper. The victim here, Mark Duran, had just picked up his daughter from school and had her in the car with him. Duran said, quote, he pointed at the back of my car, the bumper, flipped me off. It didn't end there. Duran told News 2 that Weisiger honked his horn at him for a while as Duran stopped at a stop sign. Once he started driving again toward home, he said, I looked in the rearview mirror again, and this same SUV was speeding, flying up behind me and hit me. Duran said he applied his brake, and the SUV smashed into the back of his car. police had charged the perp with felony reckless endangerment of the incident. I'll tell you, I don't believe in a lot of unnecessary bravado. I don't dress up in fatigues and run around the woods. And I don't have pictures of Hitler in my basement, and I don't go Sieg Heil and all this other garbage. You know, I'm just an average American. I'm talking about me personally. And if somebody were to stop me, well, you can imagine, Kathy, what would happen. Somebody were to stop me or ram my car with Molly in the car, here in Georgia, he would then be dead. I would kill him. I would shoot him dead because I don't know. I wouldn't know what he was doing. And here in Georgia now, it is perfectly legal. Let me change that. It is an accepted defense. If you're charged with murder, it is it's state law now that you can claim as your defense that you felt threatened. Now, this can just be verbal, but if somebody rams your car deliberately, if somebody is, you know, giving you the finger and ramming your car and you got your kid with you and you happen to be armed the way I am, you can pull up next to the guy and roll your window down and say, what? And the guy say, you run! And then you can shoot him dead. And it's a defense. And you'll probably get off without being charged here in Georgia. That's how sick the state is. But, you know, I know a lot of right-wingers monitor this program. And some of you sick bastards probably know where I live or what I do, whatever. But I just need to tell you, and this is not bravado, this is not trash talk, this is just very simply, if I ever, ever have an incident like that occur with me, whether my kid's in the car or not, your ass is dead. It's that simple. Just deader than a doornail. So keep that in mind, you bully boys. What a bunch of cowardly... Oh, God, I hate these people. Man... Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW, has filed complaints with the FTC and the IRS against Fox News host Sean Hannity. This is a press release from today. Sean Hannity, his so-called Freedom Concerts, the so-called Freedom Alliance, and Oliver North, who also sucks a paycheck out of Fox News, crew, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, alleges that while Hannity has promoted the concerts on his show, claiming that, quote, 100% of the donations are applied to the Freedom Alliance Scholarship Fund, end quote, the money actually goes to Premier Marketing. Dwayne Ward heads both Premier Marketing and Premier Speakers Bureau, which exclusively represents Hannity and Oliver North. According to Crew, Premier Marketing, in turn, donates an unknown portion of the proceeds to Freedom Alliance. Eric Burns, president of Media Matters for America, said, quote, these are serious allegations that Sean Hannity, Oliver North, and their agent must address. Hannity's listeners were told that, quote, 100%, end quote, of their money was going towards scholarships for the children of service members. If, in fact, this is not the case, these donors deserve to know how their money is being spent. Well, we went over this a couple of weeks ago when this story was first broken by a conservative blogger. It's being spent on just luxury travel for Hannity and this disgusting Oliver North, who is a disgrace to the United States Marine Corps. Anyway, Crew's FTC complaint alleges that Hannity and Freedom Concerts have engaged in illegal and deceptive marketing practices. By suggesting that all the money generated by ticket sales goes to scholarships for children of killed or wounded service members. In fact, the concerts are staged by Premier Marketing, yada, yada, yada. Hannity has promoted the concerts on his show, making statements such as, quote, every penny, 100% of the donations are applied to the Freedom Alliance Scholarship Fund, end quote. Oliver North has said, quote, there's no overhead, there's no expenses taken out. Huh? Every penny that's donated or that's raised through things like the Freedom Concerts goes to the scholarship fund, end quote. Hannity also pledged that all the proceeds of his new book, Conservative Victory, will go to the Freedom Alliance. You know, Hannity is like Sarah Palin, is like Glenn Beck, is like Rush Limbaugh. These bastards don't care about this country, and they don't care about veterans, and they don't care about the widows of veterans, and they don't care about the now orphans, or at least fatherless children of the veterans. All these rat bastards care about is ripping more money off the off people who honestly believe, I don't know why they believe this, the conservatives are right-wingers, or a thug like Sean Hannity really has their interest at heart. It's astonishing.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, Jack writes in, Mike, I heard on Rachel Maddow's program about the armed march on Washington. It sounded like to have an armed march in Washington on the anniversary of the Oklahoma bombing was almost like a celebration of it. Am I off base, Jack? No, of course not. Of course not. For everybody who's writing about this cough I have, I was just kidding. There's nothing in this booth that has been added. It's just allergies. I happened to pick up sinus infection that Kathy had for about 2 months, and I didn't get it. And then about 5 days ago, and it's just the wrong time of the year. I apologize for all the coughing, because I know it's irritating as hell. But thanks for the suggestions, but we're pretty sure what it is. This is from Live and Let Live. Kitten's got a whip. This is the subject line. Boy, you hit the nail on the head with the subject last night. Remember just a year ago when Sarah Palin was elevated by Focus on the Family as the ultimate mother saint? Watch as she now seamlessly morphs before our eyes into a comic book character right out of Batman as Catwoman! Zow! The increasingly desperate GOP's marketing strategy has shifted them away from the sanctimonious angle. Picture quiet, inactive folks with their heads bowed. And is now front and center in the red meat arena. Imagine action ready, can hardly wait for their orders. Men! What we are seeing is the call to arms, in Sarah's own words, the clarion call of the only people they can still get on board their crazy train. If anyone ever wondered what it would take to excite the average bored, gun-toting, repressed, Christian, racist, white male, this is it! As an artist with a background in marketing, I make it my business to understand how these schemes work. So yeah, crack that whip, Sarah. It's the truth, isn't it? You notice she, like Kathy pointed out, all of a sudden, you know, she's not wearing the little frocks and the designer clothes. Now she's out there in blue jeans and black leather jacket and, you know, got that hair up and bouncy and those glasses and coming out there. Hey, hope you change ye.
Yeah, well, she's a couple of bumpets short of the Grand Ole Opry, if you ask me. But, you know, these right-wingers, it's so funny because they're the ones that are throwing her out there as the straw man. When you were on with Hugh Hewitt yesterday on MSNBC, and he was talking about Sarah Palin against Barbara Boxer on Jeopardy, which I find hilarious. I mean, unless there's a talent portion, she wouldn't even show up.
Yeah.
But, and, unless she got to wear a tiara and a whip. But she's not running against Barbara Boxer. I mean, that's the point. All she can do is stand in front of these pasty white Republican men and try to make them look better. And it didn't work with John McCain because the voting public, while they may be fascinated by the circus show that is Sarah Palin,
right,
she's not the candidate. She's the quit bull. She's not running for anything. She quit her office.
That's true.
So it's hilarious to me that they think, I mean, Hugh Hewitt said against Barbara Boxer, like she was running against Barbara Boxer.
Well, you got to consider the source. People like Dennis Prager, Hugh Hewitt. I never mention these swine because they are third-tier right-wing radio talk show hosts. They're the ones that didn't make the cut. They're even below Bortz. They're way down in the cellar. And the you know, whatever comments Hugh Hewitt, which sounds like, I mean, his name, I'm sorry, but his name sounds like what you do after you've had too much to drink. Hugh Hewitt! And Dennis Prager. You know, all these guys have such nice fascist-sounding names, don't they? But when, you know, when these guys say something on their toy talk radio shows, they get the backwash from Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and Savage and the rest of these people. You know, when the audience swirls down the drain, the Prager and Hewitt and the rest of these third or fourth tier conservatives pick up the debris. So when they say something, it's you know, it's just like, it's almost laughable. That little 5 minutes, 6-7 minutes that we were on MSNBC, Hewitt couldn't find his ass with both hands. I mean, all he could do is stare into the camera. I was watching on the monitor, stare into the camera and talk talking points, and I will continue to say this. And he busts MSNBC. You know, I will say this because Sarah Palin is much smarter than Barbara Boxer, and I will say this over and over because Sarah Palin is much smarter. You know, you just want to reach out, and, you know, even though, you know, he was, I don't know where he was. I was in the Atlanta studio. Hewitt was probably on the West Coast someplace. But you just want to reach to the camera and grab him by his chicken neck and just And besides, not only is he ugly, he's also, you know, he doesn't tell the truth about anything. You know what he is. Why aren't we calling these militia bastards from Michigan what they are? White Christian domestic terrorists. They're terrorists. Why do media keep referring to these people as militia members or what are they calling? What else are they calling them? Radicals or
Republicans?
Well, yeah, they're calling them Republicans.
Fox News fans?
But they're terrorists. More on this when we come back. These are the people ought to go to Guantanamo. These are the people. I mean, if we're going to have torture, if we're going to have a gulag, which we shouldn't, but if we're going to, what the hell are we picking up brown people from halfway around the world? Get these people and put them in Guantanamo and bring in Dick Cheney and Karl Rove and let them have their way with these Christian terrorists. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. Anyway, this is the Malloy Show. These militia members that they get busted the way this group of psychopaths did in Ohio and Michigan the other day. Why doesn't the mainstream or corporate media, who are targets of these organizations, why don't they refer to them what they are? They are domestic terrorists. Purely and simply, they're terrorists. Now, it was my understanding that during the Bush years, wasn't there legislation passed that activity like this would be considered an act of terrorism and would be dealt with much the same way we deal with the brown people we scoop up all over the world and charge them with terrorism? I don't know what it is about these pigs that run around in the woods, these militia types, Christian or otherwise, and most of them appear to have some sort of claim on the Christian religion. It's a perverted claim or a perverted reading of the Christian religion. I think the Christian doctrine in and of itself, even though it's based on craziness, on superstition and a fear of death and so on and so forth. But even so, some of its proponents have said things over the course of 2,000 years that are very much in keeping with humanist points of view in terms of how they the Christians are supposed to deal with life, with their fellow man, fellow woman, whatever. And these people, these ones that claim that they're Christian militias, I don't know, I don't quite get that. And the crazy part, this group claims, And you can write this off as just nonsense. They're liars. They have nothing to do with the Christian faith. What they have to do with is their own perverted neo-Nazism. But they claim that they were arming themselves and going through all these little maneuvers and jumping around in the bushes so they could fight the armies of the Antichrist or to fight the Antichrist. Look, what is it? What is it about these people? If they believe in all the supernatural nonsense of any religion, but especially Christianity, angels and devils and nine-headed beasts and things rising up out of the earth, do these freaks honestly believe that they could take their little toy guns against the army of the Antichrist and go boom, 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 and these demons wouldn't rise up and just go rawr, and devour them in a ball of fire? What the hell are they? Yeah, we were organizing ourselves to fight against the Antichrist. Let me tell you something, you morons. The Antichrist demons would turn you into a crispy critter in about 13 seconds, you know, just by breathing on you. A. B, if you really are insurgents against the government of the United States, and the only reason that would be true is because the government of the United States now is headed by a black man. If that's the case, like I said, a squad of Marines would take all of your asses out in about 15 minutes. However long it took to hunt you down and shoot you. Idiots. But let them go on. But these freaks are as dangerous in terms of terrorism as Al-Qaeda. They were going to use IEDs. For God's sake, they are studying methods of exploding and blowing up Americans using the same tactics that are being used in parts of the world where we shouldn't be, where we've invaded. But they like to talk about, well, where they're defending freedom. No, we're not. But they're using the same tactics that are causing Americans to come home with half their skulls shot away or blown up. I mean, how sick is this? Jesus, why aren't these people in Guantanamo or locked up or someplace? Why? Anybody got any answers? Let's take some calls, all right? Go ahead and open the lines. 877-996-2556 if you want to check in here. Buzzflash editor's blog, Mark Carlin, who's the managing editor at Buzzflash. Anyone planning domestic terrorism or shooting a few people dead after reading books by Fox News insiders or Rush Limbaugh or the like should be sent directly to Guantanamo. There's dangerous in terms of terrorism to Al-Qaeda. So why should they get an exception just because they are white and Christian? They shouldn't. All our lives are at stake as each day elected Republican leaders and their right-wing media echo chamber of hate throw matches on the fire of insurrection and domestic terrorism. Yeah. You know what? Naomi Wolf. You know who Naomi Wolf is, right? Well, if you don't, do a Google. excuse me again. I'm sorry. There's just nothing I can do. Nothing I can do about this cough. So, Naomi Wolf has a piece out. It's an interview. She's being interviewed by Justine Sherrick, former Mother Jones magazine staffer. And I think this was done for alternet.org. I got to share this with you. In her best-selling End of America, Naomi Wolf outlines the 10 warning signs that America is headed toward a fascist takeover. Using historical precedents, she explains how our government is mimicking those of Mussolini, Hitler, and Stalin through practices like surveillance of ordinary citizens, restricting the press, developing paramilitary forces, and arbitrarily detaining people. Now, when that book came out, it was lauded by liberals under Bush. The Independent Publishers gave it the Freedom Fighter Award. The Nation magazine named it the best political book of 2007. And now, under President Obama, Naomi Wolf's book is providing ammunition for the Tea Partiers, the Patriots, the Ron Paul supporters, the Oath Keepers, who also warn of impending tyrannical government. Even when the book first came out, pre-Obama, Alex Jones, Michael Savage, and Fox News invited her on their shows and agreed with her. It's not just her message. She speaks their language, referring to the founding fathers in American Revolution as models, admitting to a profound sense of fear, warning of tyranny, fascism, Nazism, and martial law. When Glenn Beck warns of these things, we laugh. When Naomi Wolf draws the same conclusions or connections, we listen. How can both sides be speaking the same language, yet see things so differently? Or are we just not listening to each other? I telephone Naomi Wolf to ask her what it means when your book ends up bolstering policies you oppose. Justine, first of all, is your book still relevant under Obama? Naomi, unfortunately, it is more relevant. Bush legalized torture, but Obama is legalizing impunity. He promised to roll stuff back, but he is institutionalizing these things forever. It is terrifying, and the left doesn't seem to recognize it. Justine, did you realize that your book is being lauded within the Tea Party and Patriot movements? Naomi, since I wrote Give Me Liberty, I have had a new audience that looks different than the average Smith girl. There is a giant libertarian component. I've had a lot of dialogue with the Ron Paul community. There are the Tea Partiers writing to me on my Facebook page, but I figured they were self-selective libertarians and not arch-conservatives. I am utterly stunned that I have a following in the Patriot movement, and I wasn't aware that specific Tea Partiers were reading it. They haven't invited me to speak. They invited Sarah Palin. Justine, if they did invite you, would you speak at a Tea Party? Naomi, I would go in a heartbeat. I'll go anywhere to talk about the Constitution. I believe in transpartisan organizing around these issues. When I went on Fox News, people asked me why I was going on those shows. Are you kidding? You have to go, especially to people you don't agree with. We need to get back into grappling with people we disagree with if we want to restore the republic. There's some more. Stick around. Echoed voices in the night. She's a restless spirit on an endless flight. Ooh, witchy woman, see how.
Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. The title of this piece by Justine Sharrock at alternate.org is Naomi Wolf, : Tea Partiers Help Fight Fascism. Anyway, when asked if she would speak at a Tea Party rally, Naomi said, yes, blah, 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 I'd go in a heartbeat. She adds, I was invited by the Ron Paul supporters to their rally in Washington last summer, and I loved it. I met a lot of people I respected, a lot of ordinary people, as in not privileged. They were stepping up to the plate when my old liberal privileged fellow demographic habituates were lying around whining. It was a wake-up call to the libertarians that there's a progressive who cares so much about the same issues. Their views of liberals are just as distorted as ours are of conservatives. Justine, why do you think the sides don't understand each other? Naomi, frankly, liberals are out of the habit of communicating with anyone outside their own cohort. We have a cultural problem with self-righteousness and elitism. Liberals roll their eyes about going on Oprah to reach a mass audience by using language that anyone can understand, even if you majored in semiotics at Yale. We look down on people we don't agree with. It doesn't serve us well. There is also deliberate building up of two camps that benefits from whipping up home team spirit and demonizing the opposition. With the internet, there is even more fractioning since we are in echo chambers. With so much propaganda, it is hard to calm down enough to listen. Let me stop there just for a second. We look down on people we don't agree with. No, I look down on people who say that it's okay to invade country. I look down on people who are crazy. Justine, what do you think is the biggest misconception about the Tea Partiers? Naomi, the Tea Party is not monolithic. There is a battle between people who care about liberty and the Constitution and the Republican establishment, who is trying to take ownership of it and redirect it for its own purposes. Justine, in your essay, Tea Time in America, you said that some of the Tea Party's proposals are, quote, ahead of their time, end quote. What are some examples? Naomi, I used to think and the Fed, you know, the Federal Reserve, and the Fed people were crackpots. The media paints them as deranged. But it turned out we had good reason to have more oversight or take their platform about states' rights. Demographically, I'm a hippie from San Francisco, and I'm not culturally inclined to be sympathetic to states' rights. My cultural heritage is FDR and Medicare and federal government solutions. But if you think it through the analysis, strengthening state rights is a good corrective of the aggregation of an overreaching federal power. Take California's challenge of the Patriot Act, or states like Vermont leading the way with addressing the corruption of the voting system. It's a good example of the Tea Party thinking out of the box on how to address a problem. Well, Naomi, I haven't heard, and I've heard just about everything that's to be heard from the Tea Partiers, I haven't heard them say we need to get rid of, we need states' rights so we can get rid of the Patriot Act. I haven't heard them say we need states' rights so we can get rid of the corruption of the voting system. Let me go on. Justine, that's interesting because strengthening states' rights is key to their entire platform, the Tea Partiers, including protesting health care reform. Would you call yourself pro-Tea Party? Naomi, even though I'm appalled when racism surfaces, and I personally don't agree with certain policy solutions and a lot of what they believe in, as someone who's very concerned about reinvigorating democracy, the Tea Partiers are an answer to what I asked for. I was basically saying, don't sit around waiting for the two corrupted established parties to restore the Constitution or the Republic. The founding generation, the framers, was birthed by the rabble of all walks of life that got fed up and did risky things because they were captivated by the breath of liberty. There is a looming oligarchy, and it is up to the people to organize grassroots movement and push back. You guys have to do it yourself. Their response is the most visible, and the initiative they show is the most recognizable. People of all kinds are waking up. Even people passionate for Obama realize even that knight on a white horse isn't enough to roll back the oligarchy. I'm seeing a lot of action on the left as well that is never reported. But the Tea Party response is the most visible, and the initiative they show is the most recognizable. There's more here. If you have the feeling I'm having that Naomi Wolf has gone over the deep end, there's a little bit more here I'll share with you when we come back. But it is kind of surprising. Anyone who would suggest to me that I need to reach out to these screaming middle-aged white people at these Tea Party rallies and make nice with them, I immediately have a tendency to say, you're out of your mind. What are you talking about? The fact that it's Naomi Wolf got me to read this. We'll be right back. Mother, should I run for president? Should I trust the government? Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy. 25 before the hour. I just got a couple of emails. I want to make sure you all understand. This is not Naomi Klein who wrote this. This is Naomi Wolf, who is, she's an author and a political consultant. And she was a leading spokesperson of what came to be known as the third wave feminist movement. But she, it's not Naomi Klein. So anyone who is freaked out, don't be too. But Naomi Wolf is a transcendent, if that's my term, liberal. And I've enjoyed reading what she had to write. I'm trying to understand what she means by this. So anyway, let me finish this. Justine Sherrick, his former Mother Jones staffer. Justine says, how do you feel about your books bolstering a fight for policies you don't agree with? Now, let me back up. Naomi Wolf did write about the, creeping fascism that was coming to the United States, and she listed those 10 identifying aspects of fascism as they creep into a society. Justine, how do you feel about your books bolstering a fight for policies you don't agree with? Naomi, if people are taking my book seriously and organizing, getting into office, caring about the Constitution, and not waiting for someone else to lead them, I think God bless them. All of us should be doing that. The left should be doing that. There is always the risk in advocating for democracy that the first people to wake up might not be your team. But that's a risk worth taking. I would rather have citizens I don't agree with, organized and active, than an oligarchy of people that I agree with. Okay. Justine, these days the kind of comparisons you make in your book between America and Nazis and fascists are mostly coming out of the mouths of people like Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. What do you make of the commonality of the rhetoric? Naomi, there's no question that the right-wing idea machine saw how that message was resonating in the run-up to the last election. A YouTube video of a speech I gave went viral and got 850,000 hits. I'm not saying that is the only thing that caused this, but there is no question that the Republican and the right-wing are quick to co-opt the strategic language that's resonating on the other side and turn it against itself. Justine, how is your comparison of Obama to Hitler any different from someone at a tea party holding up a placard of Obama with a Hitler mustache? Naomi, those signs are offensive. If only the Holocaust was just about imposing health care on my people. Obama has done things like Hitler did. Let me be very careful here. The National Socialists rounded people up and held them without trial, signed legislation that gave torture impunity, and spied on their citizens, just as Obama has. It isn't a question of what has been done that Hitler did. It's what does every dictator do, on the left or the right, that is being done here and now. The real fight isn't left or right, but between forces of democracy across the spectrum and the forces of tyranny. Huh. Justine, people criticize Beck's use of that kind of language as incendiary and hyperbolic. Why is your use any different? Naomi, every time I use those analogies, I am doing it with a concrete, footnoted historical context. When people like Glenn Beck throw around the word Nazi without taking that kind of care, they're engaging in demagoguery. There's an important difference. Justine, what about your warnings about concentration camps and martial law? How do they compare to conspiratorial fears about FEMA concentration camps? Naomi, with the FEMA rumor, I've heard some suggestive first-person accounts that some good reporter should follow up on. But until I see two well-documented sources of it, I can't speak to it at all. Justine, well, more generally, you talk about the possibility of concentration camps and martial law. Naomi, I think we have gone very far down that road. I met Muslim immigrants in Brooklyn who were swept up in 9/11 raids, held in abusive conditions, beaten, denied rights. That's how things started in Germany. Guantanamo was modeled after what Stalin developed for the Gulag. Why are we engaged in psychological denial that it's not a concentration camp. In terms of martial law, my God, since the book came out, they deployed a brigade in the U.S. and suspended the Posse Comitatus Act. There's no question that it's something to take seriously. People have a histrionic view of what martial law will look like. I'm not worried that tomorrow there will be a battalion outside your Greenwich Village apartment. I'm worried about things like the McCain-Lieberman bill that would define enemy belligerents so loosely. It would include Americans, which is just like Stalin and Hitler and Mussolini. If Obama tries people with military tribunals, setting that precedent, that is what a military state does. That is what martial law looks like. From a constitutional point of view, Bush passing through the Patriot Act is no worse than Obama renewing it. Well, I don't know what to make of this interview. I really don't. If Naomi Wolf is finding common ground with these extreme right wingers, and that's what they are, the Tea Party movement, or the Tea Baggers, I call them. She calls them Tea Partiers. I call them Tea Baggers. If Naomi Wolf is making common cause with these people, isn't she leaving out the very obvious fact that what has motivated these people has been the ascension to the presidency of the United States of a black man? There's no other way to look at that. I mean, this teabag movement is racist. There is no question. It's racist. It's anti-Semitic. It's anti-gay. It's anti-progressive. It's anti-labor union. I mean, their whole foundation is anti. It's not pro. When you corner one of these rat bastards and say, well, what are you in favor of? Have I done that? No, I haven't done it. But there's so many videos out there where people have. What are you in favor of? Well, what is it that you stand for? You get the same kind of half-witted answer. I want to return to the Constitution. I don't want big government. And yet these are people who without big government would be living in the street. And when they talk about the Constitution, they're not seeing it as a document that was written to change, the living document. When they talk about they want to return to strict constitutional interpretation, that reminds me very much of the people that say they believe in the literal interpretation of the Bible. And they're liars. They don't believe that, because if they did believe that, the first time their darling daughter said something snotty to them or their wonderful son, they would have to take the son or the daughter out in the yard and kill the kid. I mean, come on, it's very simple. So they're liars. They only believe in a strict interpretation when it serves their ends. So I see the teabaggers as the same way. What kind of a strict interpretation of the Constitution? Do they want black people to be considered three-fifths of a human being again? Do they want to go back to all those women who show up? No votes for you, bitches. Is that what you want? Is that what they're talking about? Because the Constitution was not amended to allow women to vote until 1920. Do they want to do away with the Public Accommodations Act, with the Voting Rights Act? They're not in the Constitution until they were amended, until these acts were passed. Do they want to do away with what was the 14th or 15th or 16th Amendment that outlawed slavery? Do they want to do away with the first 10 amendments? They weren't in the original Constitution. They were only put in at the Constitutional Convention, wasn't it, in 1787, when Jefferson or somebody looked at the Constitution and said, wait a second, there's a whole bunch of stuff missing here. So I cannot see me ever making common cause with the kind of ignorance. In the first place, could you, let me ask you, you know, as knowledgeable as you feel that you are, and I would assume that you feel that you're fairly knowledgeable about issues, about U.S. history, U.S. government, about how we got here, right? How would you dumb yourself down to the point where you could have a conversation with these teabaggers? I think Naomi Wolf has decided to go back and take the blue pill instead of the red one. Sorry, Naomi. You and I, part company. We'll be back.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Because I don't understand. But what kind of a man should have to sacrifice his life for an area of sin?
10 before the hour. Here's an email that says, don't dump Naomi. You're both right. Email says, I found myself caught in the middle. I want to follow you and spurn the teabaggers, but when I hear what they're pissed about, I find there's a lot in common with what I'm pissed about. Now, where one places the blame diverges very quickly, and what to do about it? We're on separate planets. Still, I think Naomi has a point. Chris in, Nanaimo, British Columbia. Nanaimo? I think Chris has called in. He writes, regarding Naomi Wolf's take on the validity of right-wing positions, if it is true that she's being coveted by the right wing and that she has spent a great deal of time speaking to them, then there are issues beyond what she has raised to deal with. People are inherently lovable. We are a social species. We can't help but love those with whom we are with. The other corollary to this is that propaganda works all the time, always, on everyone, forever. If you deem a position or a policy is evil or cretinous or otherwise counter to your personal morality, then one must accommodate our fundamental character. As you listen to your lessers, as you try to perceive issues from their perspective, you demean yourself fundamentally. This brings us to the antiquated but still quite valid axiom, know their measure by the company they keep. Again, we are a social species. We can't help ourselves. By trucking with these right-wingers, she at one step accepts that their position might be valid. As such, she begins to humanize a position that is at fundamental contradiction to her own moral character. As your intellectually and experientially derived moral character is forced to contend internally with your instinctual social appreciation for one's fellows, as with any cognitive versus emotional competition, the emotional wins out. To hold to what you know is right versus what you feel is right, watch who you claim has credibility in the context of human affairs. In this scenario, to paraphrase Emerson, men and women are weakened by every herald to their banner. Men and women are not better than a town. Naomi Wolf needs time with her own. She's been inundated with those for whom for whom malevolence, zero-sum games, and narcissism reign, and she's become delusioned to the opinion they represent, which is a possible future for humanity. I think I understand what you're saying, Chris. I'm not as smart as you are, but... No, I'm not being a smartass. I mean it. What, did I lose the camera? You might want to come in when we break. And this is from Shakertown, or no, this is from Brown. Mike, I wonder if these militia domestic terrorists were read their Miranda rights. Yeah. And I wonder how long it took them to read their rights, since terrorists are to be turned over to the CIA and interrogated and treated as non-combatants and not treated as criminals and all that bunk. Where are the Republican senators and House members? Where's Lindsey Graham and Peter Hofstra and Susan Collins? You know, that whole nasty crowd of terror experts. Well, the difference? These people are white. They won't be coming out this time, Lindsey Graham and Peter Hofstra and Susan Collins, because they created this group. Well, that's my take on it. Yeah, somebody else sent me an email that said Tom Hartman also advocates the possibility. I'm paraphrasing. I don't know what he said. Just somebody sent an email that said that he seems to be advocating the same position of reaching out to these domestic terrorists. And I'll be damned. That's just not good. I can't and won't. I've had too many bad experiences with these people, and I simply will not in any way try. You know, if somebody wants to, and I know how this sounds, but if somebody on that right fringe wants to sit down and have a conversation with me about this crazy stuff they've been advocating. Okay, you know, let's do that. Send me an email. But no, I wouldn't make a single move towards these people. I consider the right wingers, the teabaggers, the rest of these people to be only active because they can't stand the fact that a black man is president of the United States, that a black man is attorney general. They can't stand it. They are inherently racist. Naomi Wolf, if she misses that point, and of course it never came up in that interview, but if she misses the point that these people are inherently racist, then as far as I'm concerned, her entire point of view here is bogus. It's nonsense. I think maybe Chris is right, because Naomi's white and these other people are white. There's an instant recognition that then starts to feed on itself. And next thing you know, you have somebody like Naomi Wolf saying, well, gee, maybe these people have a point. We'll take some calls when we come back. There's a couple other things though, I want to get to, so stick around, all right? I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. A couple of quick emails here about Naomi Klein. Naomi Wolf. Regarding Hartman, Mal writes, Hartman's gone wobbly. Weeks ago, he was really into finding common ground with the teabaggers. He's backed off a bit. I think he may be starting to see that most of them are hopeless. On the other hand, Hartman will talk to anything, even a parrot. Yeah, he will. He will. That's for sure. Hartman can talk. There is no question. Prairie 2 writes, the teabaggers believe that if government went away, there would be more money for everybody, as if the government burned money instead of printing it. It's true that if this really happened, the government went away, then some people would do better. Just like if laws against cannibalism went away, some people would get fat. Ironically, the people who are egging the teabaggers on don't believe in small government. They believe in big, repressive, privatized government, and they believe in serfs. Tom in California writes, Mike, Naomi Wolf suffers from what makes a liberal, not a progressive, and certainly not a radical anything. She's making quilts, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and life is beautiful if you want it to be. It is the classic bourgeois disease that lacks the vision, art, commitment, or the spine of a self-willed integrity. The bourgeois prefers to look nice in white ruffles and are instinctively repulsed by the sweat and hard work of struggling for universal anything other than her own position in the hierarchies she adores. Also fashionable, from the Ivy League to Amazon's top 10. It's why we have failed. It's always why we have failed. It is because these sellouts hold the door open for conservatives, religionists, and the bankers, and use the real progressives as doormats. Backstabbers all. Tom. Yeah, I tend to agree with that, with Prairie 2 and Tom. It's just, I was really shocked to read that. There was one other piece, and I don't know if I'll get to it tonight or not, but got to do some calls here. Anita is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Thanks for holding on, Anita. Welcome to the program.
I hate to change the subject, go back to the Catholic Church.
No, that's all right. No, go ahead. Whatever you want to talk
about,
go ahead.
This past Sunday, I ran into a Catholic processional going down one of our main streets here in Minneapolis with this flock of Mexicans passing out big palm leaves. I freaked out. I was like, nada for the Catholic Church. Nothing for the Catholic Church. Nothing. And he interrupted their processional, but how can we get them to disappear? How can we get the people not to buy into it? And or is that the Swiss Army do they have at the Vatican? Do you know?
The Swiss Guard?
Yeah.
I don't know if those are, I doubt if they're actual, I'm sure somebody will email now that you've brought it up. I doubt if the Swiss Guard
is there
are actually Swiss nationals, although they might be. I don't know.
I don't know either.
How to get people to give up religion? You can't. Religion has been around ever since, you know, pre-humans heard things go bump in the bushes or heard thunder and, you know, ascribed all that to spooks and haints and ghosts and spirits and gods and goddesses. You know what always, I read in the paper today that, archaeologists have discovered a doorway in, ancient Egyptian ruins that they have estimated is 3,500 years old, and it is, according to the religion practiced in Egypt, at that time, it is a doorway to paradise. Now, obviously, it's not. It's just a doorway. In the course of this article, it also said another door like this was discovered in ancient Mayan ruins in Central America. And it's not a doorway either. The point is this. We are taught, most of us, in our public school education, at least I was, about all these various and different religions. And we were always taught that they were historical events, the ancient Greeks, the ancient Romans, the ancient Israelites, the ancient Sumerians, the ancient Babylonians. They all had their gods. And with the exception of the Israelis, or now the Jews, all these gods, Egyptians, whatever, were, and all these religious beliefs were finally exposed for what they were. You know, quaint, kind of cute, a little bit weird, a little bit flaky. Isn't that, you know, we adopted such a condescending attitude about it. What about Christianity? I mean, Christianity is as goofy as any of the, and even more so. It's a bloody religion. It's a cannibalistic religion. It's the kind of religion that requires the eating of the Messiah's flesh and the drinking of the Messiah's blood. I mean, oh my God. It's like ancient Mayan blood ceremonies, or it's just bizarre. How do you get people to stop believing it? Well, you don't, until those people just devolve themselves out of existence.
Well, we haven't even heard from Mexico or Brazil or any of those, Venezuela, any of those countries yet. I mean, they're molestations.
Oh, about that? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure,
you know,
it's...
We haven't even heard from them yet.
Yeah. Well...
Okay. We'll just keep on them. Thanks, man.
All right. Appreciate it, Anita. Take care. There you go. Swiss Guards is the name given to the Swiss soldiers who serve and have served as bodyguards, ceremonial guards, and palace guards at foreign European courts since the late 15th century. In contemporary usage, it refers to the Pontifical Swiss Guard of Vatican City. They have a high reputation for discipline and loyalty to their employers. Apart from household and guard units, some formations also serve as fighting troops. Regular Swiss mercenary regiments serve as line troops in various armies, notably those of France, Spain, Naples, up to the 19th century. Yada, 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 yada. Okay, so these are Swiss people. The Papal Swiss Guard in the Vatican was founded in 1506 and is the only Swiss Guard that still exists. Mucho interesante, right? And here's another one. Yeah, okay, the Swiss Guards are Swiss. That's weird. I don't know why it's weird, but it's weird. Daryl is in Santa Fe listening on KTRC. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Hey Daryl.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, the Naomi Wolf was pretty interesting, but I have to say I think she's suffering from self-flagellation. I mean, I think the giveaway line was liberals talk down to people, and then she gives an argument that I frankly couldn't understand most of it.
Yeah.
But I think she's hung up on the thinking that she has to get in, get down with the common man, understand. But basically, any people who carry a sign that say healthcare is white slavery, that ain't the energy you want to be involved in.
Man, that's the truth. That is the truth. I think also maybe I think you're right. You're saying essentially what Tom in California said. Also, somebody suggested the Stockholm syndrome, that when you hang out for any period of time with your captors, you begin to adopt their point of view. I'm not saying that the teabaggers have captured Naomi Wolf.
I don't know.
But on the other hand, it's a little weird. I just, you know, that's the only reason I drag.
Well, it happens, but, you know, it's sort of liberal guilt. It's part of, you talk about this a lot, but too often Democrats are enablers.
Right.
You know, this feeling, I live in the South, and I don't feel the media is nearly as tough or really honest, from my perspective, about things that go down here, simply because they feel, well, we have to be even-handed. See, another mistake she's making is her argument, whatever it is, I couldn't understand it. It has a lot of self-criticism.
Hey, hold on a second, Daryl, because I got a break.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, Gordon in Oklahoma City writes, Mike, I hate to say this, but I think Naomi Wolf is playing nice with the teabaggers because they're buying her book. It's about the money, and she does not want to offend. When a white right-winger was president, they largely ignored any warnings about how close we were coming to a fascist state. Elect a black man, and suddenly they go into hyperbole. Gordon, yeah. Steve in Portland writes, Mike, I'm a loyal listener here in Portland, KPOJ, and a part-time bus driver. You have a good following among the late shift workers. I just logged on to your new live stream video and love it. Keep hammering, Mike. Whoops, that's a fan letter. Thanks, Steve. Paula writes, Mike, regarding how Naomi Wolf finds reasonable conservatives and teabaggers to talk to, she admits to having lived a sheltered liberal life, and this is the key. I grew up with a bigoted and authoritarian family. Dad is still in Rome, Georgia, still listening to Neil Bortz. Just as many Southern bigots appear to be friendly to black people with whom they have to work and yet harbor nasty private beliefs, I'm sure she ran across some people who were acting normal, quote-quote, as they explained their point of view to her, as if those views were the absolute truth. I have finally learned that just hearing their voices almost lulls me into entering their world and believing what they believe. It seems to make so much sense. In addition, as a woman, they imply they will take care of me and know best. I've come to believe that it is dangerous to listen to my dad, to Pat Buchanan on MSNBC when he is with Rachel, to many of the audio clips played on progressive talk shows. I am not sure it's a good idea even for Stephanie Miller to play clips and make fun of the right-wing world. Sometimes I close my ears. I hate to see these people get time to spew their phrases beyond all the main sources of propaganda. For years now, my dad has been going into a rant when certain subjects came up. I finally realized this is a result of watching Fox and building up unnamed anger. I try to avoid those topics. Naomi Wolf does not realize how close she came to danger. Because she's white, friendly, and a woman, she appeared to be safe. Obviously, she was influenced to some degree. Thanks for your show. I listen on the west to the West Coast stations, usually Green 960 online, because I live too rurally to get anything at night. I hope you're still on KABQ. I like hearing your references to North Georgia, but I'm glad I don't live there anymore. Is that Albuquerque, ABQ? Paula. And her last name. Yeah, I can't go there where Naomi Wolf is. I can't. Jonathan's been holding on forever. He's in Melbourne, PA. Hey, Jonathan.
Yeah, I mean, this the same thing that's going on with these militia idiots out and wherever they are is like what it's what happened with Terry Nichols. I mean, back in 2009, quite ironically, basically the same thing happened that these dipsticks were planning, which was three Pittsburgh police officers were killed
right.
by a right-wing, you know, nut whatever, because
uh-huh.
he was like, oh, they're going to take my stuff and my Second Amendment, all this other BS.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not new, and it's like, I mean, I've seen Naomi Wolf be interviewed. She is a wilting tulip.
A wilting tulip.
Yeah, she doesn't get into the conversation. She's just like smiling and nods and just, I mean, it's total beat. She's like, I'm just imagining that you're the interviewer or whatever, and you're like, so Miss Naomi, like, what do you think of your book? She'll be like, oh, it's nice. I mean, she just goes along to get along. It's total bunk.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised she even wrote the book. With, you know, when you see her do the interview, it's like, give me a break. It's like watching Oprah.
Yeah, I've never seen her interviewed.
It's like I just want to vomit.
Really?
Well, this like,
go ahead.
It's a serious subject, and it's like she treats it like it's some sort of like, you know, The View or something, or you know, morning talk show banter.
Really?
Like,
really? Well, I appreciate your take on it, because the closest I've come to an interview or seeing an interview with Naomi Wolf was this piece that was put together by the former writer for Mother Jones, the one that I, you know, read on the air tonight. And you know, I was surprised when I read it. I was like, what? Like a lot of people, though, I think my first inclination was to confuse her with Naomi Klein. I doubt seriously Naomi Klein would ever write anything even remotely resembling this. But by the same token,
Naomi Klein actually has some substance, and she will talk about it. Naomi Wolf, when she talks, it's just like it's disgusting. It's absolutely horrifying. It's like watching. Sometimes it's like listening to Ed Schultz. It's like, dude, give me a break.
Right. I know exactly what you mean with that one. All right, Jonathan, thanks, man. I got a break here. Thanks.
You're awesome.
No, I'm not. I'm just a 25-cent radio show, you know.
You rule.
Thanks, Jonathan. Take care. We'll be back.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malone.
Thank you. Ricky Martin, George in Oregon writes, Martin Luther King had the teabagger bozos figured out 50 years ago with this quote, "Nothing in the world is more dangerous than a sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity." There you go. It sure fits the teabaggers, Republicans, and the Vatican, George in Oregon. Yeah, somebody ought to get that quote to Naomi Wolf. And Kathy in Madison, Wisconsin, it is all about race. She writes, the GOP excels at scaring already scared working class whites. And their message about so-called socialism is this: Obama will take from you to give to those others. I heard and saw it all at 8 healthcare town halls last summer. Racial epithets. One speaker called our president Jig Obama. In front of a packed Janesville, Wisconsin auditorium with hardly a murmur of disapproval. I saw the disgusting posters, the works. Not everyone was a crazy teabagger. There were farmers, business owners, workers, retired, all white, mostly male. They believe what they believe because it fits their worldview. Facts don't matter. They booed what they didn't like to hear, including a Green Bay deaf mute with a sign language interpreter. And some even ran away when I tried to engage them individually. For all their protests against Obama, where were they when Bush turned a $200 billion surplus into a $1 trillion deficit with illegal wars, tax cuts for the rich, and so-called socialism for the banks? Where were they when Bush let Wall Street tank our economy and destroy millions of jobs? But then a black man got elected. And these friendly, patriotic, God-fearing, regular folks, the real America, found something to be really worried about. Kathy and Madison. Yeah, I will maintain until I suck in my last radio breath that all of this teabagger stuff, all the Glenn Beck stuff, all the Neil Bortz and the Sean Hannity and the Rush Limbaugh stuff, it is all, every last damn drop of it is based in racism. Every single bit. and is as vociferously as they deny it, it reinforces the truth. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Mike, it's racism, yes, but it's also a backlash against the loss of their favored authoritarian leaders. That's why they're grasping for someone to take Bush and Cheney and Rummy's place. In that sense, Scary Sarah is just a placeholder until another strong man comes along. It's that component that Naomi Wolf isn't considering. These people never complained about the very real assaults on the Constitution that occurred under Bush and Cheney because they don't know anything about either the Constitution or law. The only thing they think they know about the Constitution is the Second Amendment. And then they only acknowledge the dependent clause of that text. Naomi doesn't understand that when these people say they want to get back to the Constitution, it means they want to use their guns to intimidate those that do understand the Constitution and want to use violence or the threat of violence to remove a duly elected official from office so that they can have an authoritarian leader once again. Scratch these people, and underneath, you've got Sinclair Lewis's fascists. And Kate on the road writes, I'm with you on this issue about Naomi Wolf. There were a couple of folks on Bob Kincaid's program tonight that were feeling that tug to go over to the other side. It's beginning to freak me out quietly. Doesn't anyone remember or even know about what Hitler was doing to the population in 1932? This is the very same thing exactly. Like someone is following the script. So confused here. Why don't they know how they are being manipulated? Kate. That's the part I don't understand either. I just don't understand. Youth Night. Yeah, we're doing it this Friday. It's Cassie in Texas. Dear Mike and Kathy, hi. Remember when I used to call into your show on Youth Nights when you were on Air America? Not anymore. I turned 18 in November. I no longer qualify. Graduating high school in 2 months and starting at Princeton in the fall. Hope you're doing well. Cassie in Texas. Thanks for the reminder. Yeah, this Friday night is what we call Ute Night or Youth Night here on the Molloy program. I don't know how it's going to go because we haven't done it for what? 3 years? 3 years, I think. 3 or 4 years. And I don't even know if young people still listen to talk radio. I really don't. But we'll give it a try. This Friday night, the entire program, or as long as we can do it, will be not the usual stuff where I just sit here and go on and on, but it'll be, I'm hoping, calls from people 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17, those five ages, who can call in and voice their opinion about stuff, whatever it is. We pretty much leave it free form, whatever you want to say, but that'll be this Friday. So if you are a teen or if you know someone who is, you know, tell them about this. Yeah?
Do you know what young people really like?
What?
Mini Coopers.
Oh. Now get 1.9% APR financing on all 2010 Mini Cooper models. For details, visit miniusa.com/info. You thought I was going to forget that, didn't you? Got to pay the bills. All right. Well, once again tonight, I'm not going to get... I've got to do this tomorrow night. Kay Petrini's report card... And this thing, another Chris Hedges piece that I want to get. Blue, who usually calls from Australia, is now calling from Johannesburg, South Africa. Hey, Blue.
Hey, g'day, Mike.
G'day to you, or actually, good evening.
Well, it's morning here. It's very early in the morning here.
Ah.
And I'm going back to Sydney today, but and I'm not listening because I don't have a computer in the room and my hotel room here.
Yeah.
But... I was listening the other morning, and I had a friend of mine with me, and you were talking about McCain and Palin,
mm-hmm.
And we started talking about it, and I was reminded by this fellow who's a friend of mine. Years ago, I was in the Australian Navy, And this bloke that I was with was my commanding officer, as a matter of fact, in the squadron I was flying in at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1967, he had been on an exchange posting with your Navy on the Forrestal, which is was a huge carrier.
Right.
In the South China Sea at that time. And actually knew McCain, and not well acquainted with him, but, bumped into him.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about the fact that nobody in the States seems to know about what happened on the Forrestal back in 1967 when McCain was involved in.
Well, when he crash landed and cost, what, three sailors their lives?
No, he didn't crash land. He was playing around with what we call a wet start, which is a showy way of starting your engine. It's completely irresponsible and very dangerous. Involves over-priming the engine, sort of like flooding your car.
Mm-hmm.
And then a huge flame comes out the back end. It's very very impressive to look at, but it's very dangerous. And what happened was, when he did that, the aircraft behind him, one of the heat-seeking missiles on the Phantom behind him launched itself because of the intense heat. And the missile went right off the pylon on this guy's airplane and hit McCain's fuel tank, the drop tank on McCain's airplane. McCain jumped out of the airplane, of course, and ran over to the island, the superstructure. But what happened was that 134 sailors and Marines were killed in the explosions and fires that followed, and they had to shove 20 aircraft off the deck, and it cost $75 million to fix it.
Good God.
But McCain's, the point is, McCain's father was the admiral commanding the fleet at that time.
Right.
Admiral John McCain, and his father was also an admiral.
Right.
And so because of that, it was all hushed up, and McCain was flown over to the Hancock, and he joined another squadron there. Everybody hated his guts. He was a lousy pilot and just a complete drongo, as we say in Australia. And 3 months later, he was shot down, thank God, over North Vietnam.
134 Americans?
Yeah, yeah. And he was entirely responsible for that. It wasn't an accident. He was showing off because he didn't like the guy. He didn't like the pilot in the Phantom. And he had some sort of a grudge against this guy, and he wanted to show off. And
that's
what happened.
You know, I kind of fancy myself as knowing about candidates, especially. I had heard this story completely differently. I never bothered to research it because I thought that the story I got was the real story. Obviously, it is not. Hold on a second, Blue. We'll come right back. 134 dead because he was hot routing his plane. Wow. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
The game. Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives. Fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soul.
Before the hour, I want to go back to Blue here for a second, who's calling from Johannesburg, South Africa. I got an email here from a listener in Mount Shasta, Washington, and it says, tell your Aussie friend, thanks for Rupert Murdoch. You guys are so lucky he left your country. Right?
Hey there, Mike.
Yeah, did you hear me?
Yeah, thanks for Rupert Murdoch. Well, you're entirely welcome. I think, but I think that folks who don't have any idea who they're voting for probably deserve Rupert Murdoch.
That's that you could make a good argument for that. That's right.
But we were astonished. You know, we've talked about this before about, you know, the what goes on in the States, and the incredible, I'm sorry, the incredible ignorance that seems to prevail there.
Oh, you ought to live here and have to deal with it on an ongoing basis, this incredible ignorance.
But the idea that a guy like this who was thoroughly hated in the POW camps in North Vietnam, all the other officers hated him. They all said that at one time or another they were all tortured persuaded
right.
to make confessions of one kind or another, and they all did under torture. That's what you do. You know, that's expected.
Right.
But McCain would ask them. He would say, look, you know, there's something I can do for you people on a continuing basis. And, he was just thoroughly loathed by all the other POWs in the camp.
You people being the North Vietnamese?
Right. I mean, McCain would approach them, apparently, and say, you know, look, is there something I can do? Is there some broadcast I can make or some confession I can sign?
Oh, my God.
Without benefit of torture. And, of course, everybody, under torture, you do things. You know, you say things and you mm-hmm. sign things. That's well known. It's well understood that you do that.
Right.
But once you've done it, you know, then you go back to the cell and you don't cooperate. But McCain would solicit things to do, apparently.
Oh, my God.
We were often astonished over the last few years watching what's been going on in your country.
He's referred to, he still is referred to here as a war hero, not by me. I'd call him a war criminal, but for other reasons than what you have talked about tonight. But he's seen here, or he's promoted by media as a war hero. And what he did on his best days was bomb civilians to death.
Right. Well, the other thing that astonishes us, Mike, to be frank about it, is if it was a war crime for Bush to invade Iraq and Afghanistan, isn't it also a war crime for Obama to continue those wars and expand them?
Yeah.
So I don't understand why there's not an outcry to impeach Obama as well.
Well, I think most of us in this country who normally would be saying that or petitioning for that kind of activity are in a state of shock. A, because Obama was elected. B, because he is turning out not to be what we thought he was. And it's not that he said he was something. We just assumed he was something. And another reason is because this country right now is experiencing political upheaval that I don't think we've had here I don't know, you'd have to go back to the 30s when there was an attempt made to overthrow, at least there was talk about overthrowing the government of Franklin Roosevelt. To the extent that U.S. industrialists were trying to hire active military generals to handle that overthrow, and it never came about. But we're approaching that level in this country now, Blue.
Well, this is what many of us in Australia who watch what's going on. I mean, because obviously whatever goes on there is going to affect us ultimately one way or another. And it's pretty frightening, really. I mean, It takes one's breath away when mm-hmm. when you think about it. As I said, the appalling ignorance, and now there seems to be a movement afoot to take this Palin person seriously again. As now this time as a candidate for president. Assuming you people have elections again, it's frankly rather appalling. I mean,
I know. I know.
I don't suppose you could. You can't explain this.
No.
You're not an apologist for this. I understand that, but it's just frankly rather breathtaking.
It is. It is. And you ought to, if you have friends in Canada, you ought to get their take on this. They live right across the border, and are watching this with a mixture, I do believe, of shock, disbelief, and not not a great deal of humor, but some humor also, because it's just this place is turning into a loony bin. Do you know what that is? You understand the term loony bin, I take it.
Oh yeah.
All right, Blue, I gotta go. Thank you so much for calling. Have a safe flight back. Are you flying or are you flying?
I'm flying back.
You're piloting or are you a passenger?
No, I'm a pilot. I'm going. That's my job. I fly as a pilot, yeah.
Oh, I see. You fly for an airline?
That's right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that you were a commercial pilot. Is it?
Well, I'm sort of a glorified bus driver is what I am, really.
What airline is it?
Well, Qantas.
You fly for Qantas?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, can you get me a deal on a ticket?
I don't know. We can talk. We can have a chat about this.
All right, Blue, thank you so much. And call again if you would.
All right, Mike.
All right, take care. Take care. Bye-bye. Hey, there you go. Maybe we can go to, let's see if we can get Brad Friedman to substitute for a month. All right, we're out of time. Thanks for a lot. I'm sorry, Stephen of Burbank and Gwen in Oakland, I apologize. We'll get you, call in tomorrow night. We'll do it tomorrow night. All right. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.